From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Grolot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz and I will discuss the international reaction to Tuesday's election of Donald Trump as the 45th President of the United States.
She mentioned, of course, that the United States and Germany are longtime partners, that they rely on each other, but she did very explicitly point out that this relationship will continue to grow and foster as long as the new president upholds the same values of human rights and decency.
Then Rebecca talks with Mexican author Nadia Villafuerte. Her work focuses on the difficulties Central American migrants face coming across Mexico's southern border.
It's a crossing that doesn't end because often upon arrival, they are put into the situation of being deported and they never really arrive.
More about women's and gender issues and access to education right after this hour's news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grolot. Rebecca Cruz, we've been talking, of course, off and on for months about the global perceptions of our presidential election process. And now, of course, this week we have elected a new president and there is global reaction. Undoubtedly, it's not surprising that people like Vladimir Putin have come out very quickly in support of President-elect Trump. But we also have a lot of concern, a lot of criticism, a lot of sad faces around the world, not only in this country, but around the world. So what are we likely to see in the coming days and weeks?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. We'll see on that. But, you know, there is kind of an unwritten code that heads of state will congratulate new heads of state, particularly when that new head of state is of the United States. Not just us, but the entire world has been watching this election. And so those congratulations came, some of them more tepid than others. For example, yes, Putin sent a letter of congratulations. China sent a letter of congratulations and said that they hoped that this would increase the partnership and the relationship. Countries in the Middle East, their heads of states also sent notes of congratulations. I thought it was really interesting, a couple of things. First is Mexico. The head of Mexico, the leader of Mexico, did say, we hope that the relationship with the United States will continue to foster and grow. At least initially, he did not offer his congratulations. And I'm sure we can talk about that a little bit later. But that was an interesting omission. And then two women in Europe. We have Angela Merkel, obviously, in Germany, and Theresa May in the UK, both offering congratulations. Theresa May, of course, not the same sort of election, but she came to power after the Brexit vote, which many people are making a comparison here to. She was offers her congratulations with not much else, mentioning the strong relationship between the two countries. Letting it go at that. Angela Merkel's response was interesting, though. She mentioned, of course, that the United States and Germany are longtime partners, that they rely on each other, but she did very explicitly point out that this relationship will continue to grow and foster as long as the new president upholds the same values of human rights and decency. So a little bit of a jab there, a little bit of a warning that is going to be an issue, that the United States and Germany's relationship going forward could be in question if human rights are not abided by. And France had somewhat of a similar message as well.
So, I mean, just to add on to that, Angela Merkel mentioned the rule of law as well, his respect for the law in addition to human rights. So perhaps some underlying concerns there. Mexico, I was going to bring up Mexico because clearly there is an issue here with that wall that that President-elect Trump has promised and has said that Mexico is going to pay for it. He's going to make Mexico pay for it. And so there was no mention of this. Obviously, the Mexican president reiterating this very important relationship between these two countries that share a long border and a lot of citizens, by the way. But we'll see how that emerges. I mean, obviously, we're going to be waiting to see how a lot of people respond. But what we clearly can see is that right-wing parties throughout Europe and the rest of the world have been really excited and happy about this particular win. But there was clear silence in North Korea, which was also, and I think, the only country where there was complete silence on the winning of the election. But like you said, Rebecca, it is kind of standard practice. World leaders do welcome each other and then use those few moments to express their, you know, either their joy and excitement, as we might have seen from Russia, but their potential concerns and others. How is this likely to unfold, do you think, in the next few weeks before we see President-elect Trump take office?
Well, I think we'll continue to see some concerns arise. We're hearing from the leaders. We're not hearing yet a lot from the populations. I think this is particularly the concern in Mexico. The peso dropped significantly. We're hearing a lot of rumblings that people are concerned. They are worried. Obviously, the immigration issue, some of the promises made by Trump, not just to build a wall. He's backed off on that a little bit on who's going to pay for it, but to deport people back to Mexico. That's a huge concern because we're talking about a large number of people. Beyond that, his statements that he's going to tear up the NAFTA agreement. We're talking about a large amount of money that has been pooled or sent into Mexico because of NAFTA. Tearing that up, again, not going to happen immediately, but perhaps that is going to be renegotiated and that could have consequences for Mexico and for its citizens.
Well, undoubtedly, global leaders, global populations, global markets are going to react, and we'll continue to watch that and talk about it as things transition from one administration to the next. All right. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
If you have any thoughts about this discussion or any questions for Rebecca or me, let us know online at kgou.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and engage with us there. Our handle is @WorldviewsKGOU. I tweet @SuzetteGrelot. Next, Rebecca will talk with Mexican author Nadia Villafuerte about her work that focuses on immigration, women's, and gender issues. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Our guest this half hour is Nadia Villafuerte. She was born in Mexico and has a background in journalism and music, but she's primarily an author and narrator of fiction novels, poetry, and short stories. She's written about Mexico's southern border and migrants from Central America and the difficulties they face, like human trafficking and violence. She also focuses on domestic abuse, education access, the sex trade, and other issues women face. She spoke with our contributor, Rebecca Cruz, and this interview was translated into English in real time by University of Oklahoma Latin America literature professor Julianne Ward.
Nadia Villafuerte, welcome to Worldviews. You were born in Mexico, and you're a very well-known scholar, writer in Mexico, in writing poetry and works of fiction. But your works of fiction are dealing with very real and significant issues in many cases. But I thought maybe we could start off today with you talking with us about what really drew you to become an author and to the arts in general. What got you in that direction?
Muchas gracias por la invitación.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and thank you to everyone who's listening. I think that for any writer, the topics that are just very important to them are what comes out in the writing. And for me, I've been thinking a lot about my first book, which is dealing with the border. And for me, I was born in a place that I didn't really feel very comfortable. And for me, books and writing were really a way to escape. I think that I discovered through books that I could get away from my environment and I could find places and people that I understood.
And so you talked about your first book and some works later that deal with these issues revolving around the border. And I think in this country, we so often think about the border, Mexican border, with the United States. But there is obviously another border, the southern border. And in many instances, that border is also a very big issue. And we have a lot of immigrants that are coming across there. Often Mexico is actually a transitioning country or a country where people are coming from South America, Central America, and coming maybe to the United States. So what is the situation at the southern border? What is going on there?
Es una frontera porosa en un principio.
The southern border is really interesting because it's a porous border. I say porous because it's not as visible as the northern border, which for some time has been under the international eye. And for this reason, the southern border, it seems less dangerous, but the violence there is actually much more subjective. This is the first filter that people must pass through in order to continue their journey north. And it's really important for us to think about this and what this border means for us. And it I think it reveals for we as Mexicans a way of being as a country. And I think we really need to reflect on it. In my initial research, I found that the border reveals a racism that we have in Mexico with other communities. And in the exterior to the rest of the world, Mexico presents itself as a very open and welcoming country. We've received exiles, for example, after the crisis in Argentina. We received many exiles in the country, but we are not doing the same thing for Central Americans. And I think that this reveals a racism that we don't really want to talk about. So the first thing about the border is that it's the first filter. It's much more subjective. It's much easier to get through because it's not as securely guarded. You don't have all of the technology to guard the border. And that it's also the place of very subjective violence that reveals this racism.
Del que no solemos hablar.
You mentioned racism and violence. How is this racism manifest? What are some examples of the situations that these migrants from further south might face when they come across that border? And what does this violence look like as well?
Well, I could give you an example. I have an Argentine friend who has arrived in the country under very different circumstances than a person from Central America would, simply because of the color of her skin. So a Central American person might be dark-skinned, not very tall, and actually look similar to many Mexicans. But just for that reason, they're treated poorly. So with this very basic example, just for being similar, actually, a person is treated differently than a white, Caucasian, middle-class person who enters the country under different circumstances. And I really do think that that's something, that's a racism that we don't talk about.
So just to clarify, you're saying that the Argentinian, because they have whiter skin, that they are actually treated better, whereas those that have darker skin, even in Mexico, are treated worse.
Exactly, yes.
Nadia Villafuerte speaking with our contributor, Rebecca Cruz. We'll hear more of their conversation right after a short break. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Our guest this half hour is Mexican author Nadia Villafuerte. She's been describing her work about immigration, gender, and women's issues. She spoke with our contributor Rebecca Cruz, and their conversation was translated in real time by Julianne Ward, a professor in the University of Oklahoma's Modern Languages and Literature Department who studies Latin America.
Many of the people that are coming from Central America are, and those that come from Mexico through the United States as well, in many cases, are coming from bad situations, poor economic conditions, corrupt governments, and the like. We've heard a lot about Honduras, El Salvador, other countries, and oftentimes there's children that are being sent. This obviously opens the door for smuggling, trafficking, and abuse, perhaps physical abuse, but also abuse of financial resources and further corruption. This is also the situation at the southern border, I understand.
That's right. In fact, I think it was in 2014 that this crisis became palpable, the crisis of children sent by their parents or their families to the northern borders to cross over, often into the United States. And I think that this crisis of the children is symptomatic of our economic moment that we're living in. Economic inequality is palpable not only in Latin America, but you can find it in the refugee crisis in Europe. And I think all of this crisis is provoked by an unbalanced economic system, and it's very dramatic. Children without a choice are sent. And I would just like for the listeners to imagine the idea of allowing a child to cross an entire country facing difficult circumstances and very dangerous circumstances. And it's a crossing that doesn't end because often upon arrival, they are put into the situation of being deported. and they never really arrive. So they don't know what will happen when they arrive. They don't know what will happen when they return. It's very dramatic.
Very dramatic indeed. I can and only imagine the fear that the children and parents must experience. For all people that get to the southern border in Mexico, if they are to get past, you say it's a porous border, so there's some success in getting past that border, what is their experience afterwards? What is their daily life? Are they continuing to migrate northward? Are they staying? Is it probably a little bit of both? But what is their everyday life after that point?
That's an interesting question. So as I was saying before, the southern border is very porous and there's not this sort of technological coverage, this rigorous vigilance. So the crossing isn't as difficult as it can be for someone who's trying to cross the northern border. But as it is porous, it's also more subjective. And if people do manage to cross, they find more checkpoints in the area, in Chiapas, in the state. And so many people stay to work in the state, and these temporary jobs that they take become a sort of a checkpoint or something that's holding them there. Many of them will have very low salaries. They might be working as waiters or as cleaners, and they'll stay because they can't save up the money to continue their journey. And also, there's a lot of violence that doesn't allow people to continue. Violence on the part of the federal police, the municipal police, the state government, and gangs, too. Gangs are generally formed of migrants who have been in the U.S. and have been deported for being there illegally or for being undocumented. And they return and they find in Chiapas these groups that they join, of people who might be thinking of going back to the U.S. And so Chiapas is really, it's a place for passing through. It's for people who are going and people who are returning. And it's also a place of resentment. So a place where gangs are the principal aggressors against other Central American migrants. And so really being in Mexican territory does not mean being safe. They suffer a lot of violence on the part of officials, other deported migrants, and this can stop them from continuing their journey north.
And I would think that there's also a gendered dimension to this, that women are particularly vulnerable to sex trafficking, violence, domestic violence, those sorts of issues. Gender is one of the other issues that you have looked at, gender relations, how gender is experienced. And one area that I find particularly interesting is your work in looking at the GLBTQ, particularly the transitioning populations. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how women and then these other populations are experiencing everyday life, and then specifically the people that are in this kind of transitioning category.
Sí, cuando estaba haciendo la investigación.
Yes, when I was doing the research to write the book, I realized that violence against women is doubly visible for their condition of being migrants and as well as their condition of being women. They suffer assaults through this hierarchy of systemic violence going from the federal and municipal police to the state government. And so these women are experiencing violence from the system that supposedly should be protecting them, but also from their own countrymen and other migrants who are in the same situation and gangs. And additionally, they face violence from the Mexican population that takes advantage of their circumstances and really doesn't think of all of the rights that are being denied to the people who are crossing the country. They don't have money or means. That's why they're escaping the conditions of their own country. And I do think it's a gender issue that can't be ignored. The majority of my stories have to do with women who suffer and face this violence. They've left their homes searching for a better life, and the majority of them are mothers, single mothers, they have families, and really their motives are to help their families in making this journey. And I think it's really important to talk about the racism, but also this misogynistic patriarchal system that permits impunity for the police and others who are abusing these women. And I think it's very important to denounce this violent process through the stories.
Y me parece importante denunciarlo a través de estas historias. De pronto, desde el primer libro.
And then maybe starting with the first book and my others too, the figure of the transvestite is a way to symbolize the possibility that human beings have to be many more selves than just one. And I think that's why I'm interested in that figure. It symbolizes an identity conflict. And my stories really question the concept of identity. Some of the characters who migrate, or someone who migrates, converts into another person. And the transvestite, too, has this possibility of a multiple identity. And I'm interested in gender issues, but really also the idea that we're never just one person. So people who migrate, but really everyone, has this possibility. So I think that migrants and these kinds of characters are my way of thinking through identity, and it's very complex and very interesting.
De la identidad que es muy complejo y es muy interesante.
These are all such big and important issues, it seems, and the fact that you're taking them and building characters in some way, putting a very human face on big issues is a fantastic and important way to bring that to light. You are currently working on another novel. Could you maybe just briefly tell us a little bit about that?
Sí, de hecho, creo que esta novela que
yeah, in fact, with this novel, I'm finally, it's a way for me to close a cycle, and it's a territorial cycle and also a cycle of ideas that I've been obsessed with over the past years. And so this novel is based on a series of homophobic crimes that took place in the 1980s in the south of Mexico again. And it's my way of closing the cycle of the figure of the transvestite, someone who changes gender and identity. And with these crimes, the character wants to escape, but he finds that even in his dreams, he can't escape the fear. So that's just sort of a brief idea of the novel.
Rasgos, la idea de la novela.
Wonderful. Well, we'll definitely look for that. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Muchas gracias.
You've been listening to Rebecca Cruz's conversation with Mexican author Nadia Villafuerte, which was translated in real time by University of Oklahoma Latin American Literature professor Julianne Ward. We have more information and links to some of Villafuerte's work online at kgou.org. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our weekly podcast. KGOU produces Worldviews as part of a collaborative partnership with OU's College of International Studies. Audra Bruhls writes our content for the web. Katie Holland researches our interviews, which are edited by Brian Hardzinski, and Sam Dupre produces the show. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Guerlat.